You've dealt with this head on. And I said earlier, you did a wonderful, tough work. But I went and saw it myself, what you did. I remember the greenhouse, the jobs you created, transitional housing for men and women, the meals.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a one-person force with a team that did wonderful things to address homelessness in the state's largest city. I know you're retired from that, but you have a great perspective. You also took on the ACLU when they sued you for what?
Yes, they did. We had a hard and fast rule, at least when I was there, that we would not allow registered sex offenders or convicted arsonists to stay in the shelter for what I think was obvious reasons. The problem is if you accepted any federal funds, which we did, a small amount, not a lot, but we accepted about $275,000 of our $1.4 million budget came from the federal government. And the federal government, by accepting that money, you say that we will let anybody and everybody into the shelter. Well, again, my feeling was we had a lot of particularly women, but also men who had been sexually abused at some point in our life. And there was no way I was going to let somebody who was a convicted registered sex offender stay in a shelter where there were so many vulnerable people. So the ACLU, in their infinite wisdom, went and found somebody who was a registered sex offender who had been told that they couldn't stay in our shelter, and because they couldn't take us to court unless they had somebody. So they went and they scoured the earth looking for somebody who was a registered sex offender who had been denied entry and got him to be their client, and they took us to court. And, I spent a lot, as you know, Jack, it's a constant running out there trying to raise money, which, you know, kept the operation going. I had to take $5,000 of money that, in my opinion, could have been used to feed people and use that to pay a lawyer to fight the ACLU. We fought and we went to Superior Court, and ultimately that case was thrown out. I mean, the judge pretty much laughed at the ACLU and said, do some common sense here. This guy's a registered sex offender. Right. There are vulnerable people staying at the shelter.
But you seem to Charlie Sherman, by the way, and I spent a few moments before you came on in the last hour and this hour, you know, describing your career, media, TV, radio, our friendship, but your calling, your giving back was to lead the New Horizons effort and help this situation for a number of years in your life. You did a great job at it. I want to come back to the current crisis. The judge today is expected to rule whether the city can break this up. And it just seems to me, Charlie, I want you to run with this, and correct me if I'm wrong. I know there's been different groups now, and there's different groups that took over New Horizons. I don't want to get into all the personalities, but you were a leader that was apolitical about this. You were out there raising the money. You were at the shelters. You were there when the meals were served. You did this nonstop. I don't think the population of downtown Manchester has changed all that much from when you did this. So my point is, why is the homeless crisis over the last several years getting worse and worse and worse to the point where they get these large, you know, encampments that have to be broken up by the city? I don't remember it being as bad when you were running New Horizons. And I mean that objectively.
The numbers were nowhere near what they are now. I mean, what has happened has just become a crisis in the city of Manchester. My feeling is it started when the homeless population was starting to grow in Manchester. This goes back probably 2-3 years ago. And the city, in their infinite wisdom, and I don't want to get political about this, but the city opened up an encampment across from the Armory on North River Road in Manchester. They basically said the welcome mat is out. Anybody who's homeless can stay here. We will provide you with 24-hour, round-the-clock police protection, 2 meals a day being brought in from the food bank, showers, bathrooms. And they basically encouraged anyone who was homeless, not just from Manchester, but from anywhere, to come to the city and have a safe, protected area. And dozens, probably hundreds, ultimately came in.
Right.
And at some point, the mayor of Manchester said, okay, we're going to be closing this up in a few weeks. This was after it was open for a few months. You don't just close up and then say, okay, folks, doors closing. Everybody has to go back to where you came from. That doesn't happen. So thus, the numbers were there, and started spreading around the city. Then they set up the encampment behind the courthouse, and then they move around to the point where, you know, now they want to do it again, or they have been doing it, where they said, set up around New Horizons on the sidewalk and around the corner or anywhere else, and we're going to provide police protection again. The word in the homeless community spreads like wildfire.
Right.
Come to Manchester. It's safe. It's protected. Nobody will bother you. You can't do things like that. I understand the compassion side. Believe me, nobody understands more than that. But then there's the common sense side, too.
Right.
The common sense side is you don't allow an encampment on a public city street to go up one street and down Pine Street. It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, and a multitude of things. But when you were running New Horizons, I remember, and you got to help me, what was the name of the street again?
Which one? Manchester Street? Manchester and Pine.
Manchester and Pine.
The two streets
that whole area, if you were a homeless person, that whole, you knew day or night you could go there, and it became a center inside where they could get where someone could get a meal, a family could get a meal, someone could get housing
Absolutely.
For a night or two. It became a safe, it became a manageable thing. Right now, it doesn't seem to be manageable what's going on.
Well, and that's the problem. It's gotten out of control. But we, first of all, we would never allow anybody on the sidewalk. Kevin Kinder, who was my program manager, would go out and would talk to them and say, you can't stay here. You can come in. We'll find a place for you, even if it means putting down a mat because we're at capacity here, so you can stay in here. But you can't stay on the sidewalk. It's common sense. You can't stay on the sidewalk. We also raised $125,000 to build an indoor waiting area, just so these people wouldn't be waiting outside. And the organization that has taken over New Horizons eliminated that, tore down the greenhouse. We have Angie's Place, which was a homeless shelter for sober women. They closed that up. They've eliminated a meal in the soup kitchen for anybody who wants a meal. Now that's the only people who can eat there.
That's the other thing I just want to say.
In a shelter.
That's the other thing I just want to say. What New Horizons was under your leadership, by the way, Charlie Sherman, who used to be the executive director of New Horizon after his radio TV days. Charlie, the meals you provided, I mean, how many? Hundreds a day. You remember the numbers you used to tell me.
About 125 a day.
At least.
Anybody who walked in. Jack, if you walked in and you wanted a meal, no questions
asked. But I thought some days you were up around 250, 300 on some of the swell periods.
There were days there were a couple hundred people at least.
Yeah. Well, it's frustrating.
But we found a way. That's what we did. That was our mission.
Yeah.
Our mission was simple. Our mission statement, Jack, was to provide food, shelter, and supportive services as well to anyone in need in the city. When the organization that came in changed all of that, we had a structure. We had a lot of people would say to me, Charlie, geez, you run this like a prison. Well, it's not that we wanted to run it like a prison. People in that situation
need
structure in their lives.
Yeah, you need a system. But also, and I'm just going to say it, you were driven. This became a thing in your life after you had a few careers, if you will.
Passionate.
This became your calling. This became your
absolutely.
Why. Your why. You know, why do you, what do you give back? What do you do at the end of life? And you did it for a number of years. But I think sometimes efforts like this, they need someone at the top in any city in America or a community who has the vision and the passion. And you were there. And sometimes you do need that leadership because it spills down and outwards. And the police chief knows it. The fire chief knows it. The EMT people know it. The homeless people know it. Everyone knows it, that so-and-so is the person who's running this. And I worry sometimes that...
I think you hit it on the head, Jack. I think a big part of it is... those who are the clients need to know it.
Right.
They need to know that there's someone, if they have to talk to them.
There's a fair square deal here.
It's available to talk to them.
Yep. Simple statement. If I need a place to stay, meals, there are rules. Can't break them. But you know what? It's nicer to be indoors on a January or February night than outdoors freezing and to be assaulted or, you know, unhealthy. But to have a shower and something to eat and then get on your feet. Or you tried to help people get... You know, kind of the number of people I met that went through New Horizons say, Jack, I was there for a short time, and now I own a business, I have a home, and I give back. I donate each year because it worked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those. My one other question, and I've said this to Joe Kelly Lavasser as well and a few other people, we had that indoor waiting area that we built, as well as the food pantry. Well, the organization that's running it now has bought a separate building to put the food pantry in, and they literally tore out the benches and the whole indoor waiting area. So that's a whole big half of the building. Now, we had 130 people was our capacity in the main building. What is in, and nobody's answered this for me, what is in that area that the food pantry used to be and the indoor waiting area used to be? That is certainly big enough to put another 130, 140 beds in there,
yeah,
which is about the number of people who are on the street around the building. But you can't seem to get an answer of what's in there now. Are there administrative offices in there?
Yeah.
Is there a play area in there? Beyond me why you can't use that space.
It's not your battle anymore, but I thought it would be good to get you on.
It still breaks my heart, Jack.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart to see what's happened.
Well, I wanted to get you on because I think you'd be able to put a perspective on it on a day when a judge is issuing an order of whether or not the state's largest city can break up this encampment, which, by the way, I don't know, Charlie, because I don't live directly in Manchester or in the area anymore, or go through it downtown. I think it's kind of sad because I think Manchester's had its ups and downs over there. You and I know we had decades in living there and working there together in our TV days.
Yep.
And there used to be a time, I'm just going to say this, Charlie, I think you and I can say it. There used to be a time where you could walk 1 a.m. on, you know, any street in Manchester for the most part.
Absolutely.
And not worry about, you know, being hurt. And now the city's not so safe. It's got its problems. It still has a lot of great stuff, a lot of great people. That's not my point. But the fentanyl overdoses, the homelessness, it's getting to a point where it's almost taking over the city a little bit. And
yeah,
my last point is how many people, when they break up these encampments today, I mean, how many people, homeless people, are actually living in these encampments? Do you know roughly?
From what I'm told, well, in the encampment around New Horizons, or as I refer to it, New Horizons, is supposedly around 130. But there are many other encampments around the city, down by the railroad
tracks. So it's got to be hundreds of people, literally.
Cobo Junction. Yeah,
hundreds.
I mean, there's always going to be. We had outreach workers who knew where every single one of these encampments
and
was.
And you know the difference,
the
too,
we
is
go out and see them.
And by the way, if a police officer or someone at 2 a.m, a firefighter had to bring someone, they knew where to bring them before. Where do they bring them now? Charlie, we got to run. Thank you for what you've done. We'll get you back on Good Morning New Hampshire, the Pulse of an HGMI Studios. Thank you, Charlie Sherman.
All right, Jack.